All right, I think we'll call this meeting to order. It's 4 o'clock of the Story County Board of Adjustment. Roll call vote, please.
McGill.
Here.
Scarlett, absent. Brecky.
Here.
Youngberg.
Here.
All right, very good. In front of you, you've got the agenda from our last meeting. One correction that is on there, we noticed on the backside when we were discussing the Hickory Grove Inc. LLC VAR 0517, when it came down to the vote, we forgot to list Karen as Karen Youngberg as absent, and we put in there since that time it's been corrected. So if I hear no other objections to the minutes than that.
So moved. Is that approved? Okay.
Second.
Motion second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. All right. In front of you for this evening, you have the agenda. Do I hear any additions or subtractions from the agenda? If not, at least it will stand as submitted. All right. Looking in front of us here, I kind of got them a little bit out of order, but we have none. Sorry about that. Public comments. Just a little bit on how the meeting will run. For those of you who are here, what we generally do is we'll invite public comments on any item that is not in front of the board this evening for discussion. And after that, then we'll go into our discussion items. I would request that if you are attending, please sign in. And if you have any comments and you approach the podium over there, please give your name and address so we've got it for the record. Moving on, I'll ask, are there any public comments on anything other than we've got before us this evening? If not, we'll move into the first one. CUP 0716, Manawa Borrow Pits. Jerry.
Yeah, before I start, I want to introduce to the Board of Adjustment our new intern for the summer, Ryan Schweitzer. He's attending the University of Iowa. He's obtaining his graduate degree in planning, but he's studying it really well, and we've got him working hard already. He presented two residential parcel subdivisions with Amelia before the Board of Supervisors yesterday, and he's working on some work program things. And we've got some other projects that are queued for him, so just wanted to introduce you to him.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, as you mentioned, this is Conditional Use Permit 07-16, Manawa Borrow Pits. The applicant is Ronald D. Fadness, General Counsel, Brewing Companies, Decorah, Iowa, representing Manawa Construction out of Harmony, Minnesota. The company's General Manager, Quentin Thorson, is here this evening if you have specific questions for him. Property owner is G.C. Lee Joint Venture. Mark Gannon is listed as one of the title holders, Ames, Iowa. Property is located in Grant Township. It's about 36 acres, section 18. This is on 245th Street, east of I-35, south of Highway 30. Again, this conditional use permit was before the Board of Adjustments. A few months back, it was to create a borrow space, sand and gravel, sand and dirt, rather, material to be used for the new off-ramp from I-35 to Highway 30 eastbound. The material was also used for the pillars for the flyover bridge that is being constructed, which will extend from I-35 to Highway 30 westbound. So some of the information that was submitted with this resubmittal are the conditional use permit application, written explanation of reasons for the request, drawings showing the borrow pit location, a document from the DOT on the easement. Much of the materials, equipment, supplies are not located on this property. They're on the property to the north. And it's used as their transition area, staging from that property to the DOT right-of-way. And then responses to county staff comments. So Initially, again, this request was for a borrow pit to extract materials for the relocated off-ramp from I-35 to Highway 30 eastbound. And again, it was also used for the pillars for the flyover bridge. So the Board of Adjustment took action on that conditional use permit January 18 of 2017. There were a couple of conditions, one related to the need to obtain a floodplain permit, which was obtained. And then there was concern during the time of site review, it was noticed that there was no erosion control materials where the existing creek was located. And then soon after that, they did put down materials. So we're in an A1 agricultural district. Again, the land use for the most part is the borrow pit. It's about a 7 to 8 acre area on the north portion of that 36 acres, and then the balance of that land is currently in row crop production. There's an access in the northwest corner of the site that they used, and really the property was chosen because of its proximity to the I-35 project. It's right adjacent to that right-of-way, and then with the access being in the northwest corner, it was very efficient for their operation and kept the large equipment off of the adjacent road. So the future land use designation, it is part of the Ames River Fringe. It's in the Ag and Farm Service area. So we're just showing this. This is from the first time around to show the project. Again, it really has everything to do with this flyover bridge that's being constructed, I-35 to westbound Highway 30. And again, they're working on the grading work for the new off-ramp that was constructed from I-35 to Highway 30 eastbound. This just shows you the area where much of their equipment, their cranes, trucks, trailers, materials for the construction of the actual bridge work that they're doing is located. And again, that's the parcel directly to the north. Site photos, again, it's a 36-acre parcel. It is directly east of Highway 30, just south of 245th Street, which is a county road. Closer view, the blue represents floodplain. The north portion, again, is the borrow pit. They did submit a floodplain permit for impacting that floodplain. Adjacent land use, there's a dwelling to the north, there's two dwellings to the east. You've got agricultural farm ground to the south, pallet materials, borrow pit is to the west, the southwest of that intersection. This is the aerial perspective. The green shows you approximately where the borrow pit is. This is the drawing that was submitted initially. They're initially planning to have two separate borrow pits. I think part of the change was driven by the, we're told that it was part of the property owner's request to make that one pit, so that material in the center was used for the operation. So this is what will result. It will be one borrow pit, approximately nearly 8 acres. It was extended easterly about 40 feet from the original location. Again, there's a 50-foot setback from all property owners. Upon review, prior to preparation of the staff report, it was noticed that they did not meet that setback. It was communicated to them. We suggested that they refill so that they meet the 50-foot setback, or that they request a variance. They're indicating that they're going to meet the 50-foot setback, so they're going to take material from this borrow pit to reach that 50-foot setback. This just shows you a side elevation of you know, what that will look like, approximately 10 to 14 feet depth. The county's ordinance does require a 5-to-1 slope when the borrow involves a water body. So it's a 5-to-1 slope into the water body and then 5-to-1 out of it. The top or the perimeter of the berm will have a 4-foot wide berm, and then it'll go back into a 5-to-1 slope on the sides. Again, the reason for the extension has to do with the fact that they need 200 yards of sand to help stabilize the cranes. They have cranes that are anywhere from 200 to 300 tons to provide a level space for lifting the horizontal beams that will help with the rest of the bridge construction. It's also going to be used when they're out in the road right-of-way on or adjacent to Highway 30, the freeway, so that they don't cause damage to the road surface. Again, it'll be 400 by 435. That was the when it was two, so times two, it'll be about an 8-acre pond when it's completed. They're proposing to stock it with fish. It will be used, it'll hopefully provide benefit to wildlife habitat. They've indicated that they've extracted about 130 yards of material so far. And then again, when they're completed with the restoration work, the perimeter will have a berm to help keep out floodwaters. The time frame, or operation time will be from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. while they're working on the restoration. It will take 2 to 4 employees to do that. With the first submittal, they did provide a bond of $10,000 to cover the cost of restoration in case it's not completed by Manoa, and the county can use that to hire a consultant to, or a contractor to complete the work. So it's still active. Some of the equipment that will be used for the work, dozers, excavators, haul trucks, and then again, upon completion, it'll be an 8-acre pond stocked with fish used for habitat. It'll benefit habitat. And then the south portion will still be in agricultural row crops. So with a conditional use permit, we look at six things, standards of approval. The first one is the compatibility of the use to the surrounding properties. Again, the site was located or chosen because of its proximity to the project. You know, that's why they're there. And then because of its proximity, they're able to keep impact to 245th Street to a minimum. And again, the goal is to extract an additional 200 yards of sand for leveling their cranes. Transition is another thing we look at, you know, whether or not there's a need for buffering between properties. Again, this is a large, it was all in row crops. Now, upon completion, there'll be a sizable amenity that will provide benefit, hopefully, to the surrounding properties. Traffic will likely be minimal because, you know, upon the site review, we noticed that there is nothing. There are no equipment in the northwest portion where there was a gravel pad which was used for that purpose. Again, all the equipment is on the north parcel. The parking and loading, again, they're using the north property for staging equipment. Signs and lighting, no signs or lighting is planned. And again, most of this work, when the restoration occurs, will happen during daylight hours. We do have a floodplain permit with regard to environmental protection. We did mention that the approximately west quarter of the north parcel, where they have material stored, is in the floodplain. Again, the option there is to request or submit a floodplain permit with equipment and materials. Normally, you have to elevate 18 inches. You have to secure by anchoring, or you have to come up with an evacuation plan. And they've indicated that they'll move that material. And then the ordinance states that if the Board of Adjustment concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that if completed as proposed, there's a strong probability that the development will. And then there's five things that the Board of Adjustment is to look at. The first one is not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property. It's going to be limited impact. Most of the extraction work is completed, so they're just going after the sand that they need for their cranes. Impact to light and air. You know, again, this was a agricultural field and row crops. They have indicated that they'll continue with dust control measures along 245th Street when needed. Under the increased congestion in the roads or the hazards from fire, flood, or similar dangers, again, they're going to use 245th Street for material movement. The operation, again, of the sand extraction will occur from this site to the access to the right-of-way to limit impact to the road. And then the number four talks about impact to property values. The goal and request is to extend the permit through September 30 to complete the extraction of the sand for the use of the equipment needed to maneuver the horizontal members of the bridge. And then again, when this is all completed, there'll be a pond that will provide benefit to the property and to habitat. We also look at impact to the cornerstone to capstone plan, which is talks about preserving the county's rural character and high-value agricultural land, protecting environmentally sensitive areas, and identifying areas for future growth and development. And then also we look at impact to the land development regulations. And staff, we think that those standards have been met with this extension request. We did route this to the departments for review, and mostly comments came from planning and development, our department, and the engineering department. The engineering department had similar questions about the setback distance and then the slopes. Basically, there's a statement about the fact that the slope should be gradual and not severe. And there were some areas that, there were some significant slopes, which they indicated that they would address. We did send notices to property owners on the 15th of June within a quarter mile of the property. So far, we have not received comments. We also, because of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, sent the notice to the City of Ames and Gilbert, and then also to the City of Nevada, and received no comments. Again, we do have the $10,000 restoration bond. It still is current. And then we do request that the applicant contact us upon completion so that we can do the review to make sure that everything meets the county's requirements for the restoration. And then just a few site photos. This is looking to the south. This will all be one large pond. You can see some of these slopes are fairly steep. Looking to the south, there's some material here, broken concrete. I think that's probably from the previous off-ramp to Highway 30, which they've indicated that they will remove. This is the access in the northwest portion of the site. You're seeing the freeway. And then, too, this is the material that's in the floodplain area. That's the parcel to the north. And again, they've indicated that they'll move that. Looking at parcel to the north again, you see the crane and some other items used for their bridge work. This is looking to the east down 245th Street. And then points to consider, again, what is needed is the 200 yards of sand to help stabilize the crane. They did indicate that they will meet the setback requirements, which is a 50-foot setback from all property lines. And that, again, this is an extension for about 3 months through September 30. And with that, that brings us to the alternatives. The planning staff is recommending that it be approved, which is item one. Story County Board of Adjustment recommends approval of the conditional use permit as put forth in their request, which was CUP 07-16 as submitted. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you.
As I said, the general manager is here today.
Yeah, I have questions. So will the center of that be completely removed then?
Right. Yeah, initially it was going to be two separate ponds, and now the plan is to make it one large pond.
So is the size itself larger, or is the depth larger?
As far as I know, there's no deviation on the depth.
Okay.
But it's going to be a little larger. And again, they shifted it from where they initially thought it would be at the request of the DOT, but they moved it further away from the freeway right away.
So do they have an area? Because I didn't see any dirt for the exterior berm when it's completed.
I did not see any stockpiling of dirt, just the broken concrete. So that's maybe something that the general manager can address, because it's a fairly sizable pond. And again, the plan is to have a 4-foot wide berm around the perimeter of it.
Okay.
Well, who is the general manager to speak for the public, for the applicant? There he is. All right. Come to the podium and state your name and address, please.
Quentin Thorson, 850 Wicked Drive in Harmony, Minnesota. I'm a general manager for Minowa Construction. We've pushed a majority of the black dirt material to the south side of the pond. So that has been semi-stockpiled to cover, and we do have more black dirt coming off the project to cover the pond because we still need to obliterate the ramp for westbound 30. And remove material from there for when that's complete. So, but we have stockpiled black dirt, and we will be covering.
Is that a claim?
Yep. Okay. That and the whole center berm that's still left in there. There's a finger that comes out in the center of the pond, and the center of that is actually all black dirt because we found a huge vein, so we started stockpiling it right there, and that's when we had discussed and decided to make it one pond because the sand was really strange through there. So, and all that is meant to be hauled and shaped and from there around to the north side to get to the setback, the proper setbacks and everything.
So how do you reconstruct the banks when they're steep like that and not meeting?
You'd go through and start grading it, blade it off, and start filling it from one side to the other.
So you need to take it from the south to the north?
Yep.
And you can stabilize doing stuff like that.
Yep. Similar to how we do the roadway, we'll start, cut in at a step down and start filling it up, cutting the slopes as we go and covering them.
The plan for the concrete that's there?
That's going to get removed to most likely to either Manats or back to one of our own pits for disposal. They'll crush it and reuse it.
I have one just, and this may be also addressed to Jerry. Since we're enlarging the pond, is that $10,000 bond sufficient to cover any restoration that has to go on?
Well, actually, it was going to be two ponds, but it would also include the center area.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so the center area is going to be water instead of dirt. So
okay.
I would think that we would be okay with that amount.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Thank you. Any comments from the public? Yes, sir.
I just might address. I'm Mark Gannon. I represent the owners. I manage the farm for the CG Lee Company, CG Lee LLC. And we had a borrow pit on the other side of the interstate, too, from one of the other ones. And I think it'll be really attractive when we're done. I honestly don't know how that drawing got in there with those two ponds the way it was, because that's not the way I sent it to them originally. There was a guy that was ahead of, before Quentin, when I saw what they were doing, I said, I don't want it that way. Originally, we talked about having them lengthwise instead of that way, so we stopped that. But anyway, we're going to dress it up. And my only concern is it's pretty steep on the north end. When you talk a 50-foot setback, is that where the slope starts down, or
I'm not a land surveyor.
Or is that where the water starts? Is that?
It would be from where the slope starts.
So they got to fill 50 feet.
So it's supposed to be 50 feet from the property line, which is the south right-of-way line of 245th Street.
Okay. Because it's right up to the edge right now. So,
pardon me?
I mean, it's pretty well right up to the edge right now where it starts down.
Yeah, I measured approximately 50 feet from the center of the road to where it starts the extraction.
Now you're talking the center of the road or from the right-of-way?
Yeah, from center. So I'm thinking it's 17, 18 feet from the front property line approximately.
But the 50 feet setback, is that from the right-of-way or is that from the center of the road?
That's from the south right-of-way line at 245th Street.
Okay. All right. That was the only thing I wasn't sure about is what.
So is the right-of-way 33 feet then from the center of the road?
I think it is a standard. Okay. So it's a 66-foot road right-of-way.
So if the 10,000 isn't enough, what happens then?
Well, the time to address that is probably now. Like I mentioned, we did route this, gave this consideration. I'm not thinking that that's going to be a concern, that additional funds are needed to take care of the restoration work. The first request was to do two separate ponds. But it covers this whole area, you know. And they ended up shifting it to appease some requirements that the DOT had.
So engineering had no comment
on that. Okay. I don't think it's going to be 8 acres of water either. It's probably going to be 4 acres of that. I mean, really, when it's all said and done. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Yeah. And one of the reasons it was held up, is we were hoping that Petersons would use this on that last. You guys had another permit, and this made a lot more sense than what they did. I'll tell you that right now, because we had permission to go down through the property and through the Nevada to get it directly down there. And for some reason, they decided to go over on the other side and haul 2,700 loads of dirt out on Highway 30 twice, back and forth. And the idea was that we could use this and just increase it another couple acres and do whatever they need to do, and never take a machine on the road. But I didn't come to the meeting and object, because we thought we had it worked out with Petersons to do that. And that was one of the reasons they held up, because I thought if somebody's going to take over this borrow pit and make it a little bigger, you know, work it all out with everybody and have one versus two. But it didn't. I guess it didn't work out that way. So, but that was one of the reasons it did. It's been, we thought we could do that other thing. I mean, I never did hear officially that didn't work, but I guess you guys have approved it to put it over on the other side for that other project. So anyway, it's a potential for the next time something gets done in that area, so we don't have, you know, these things scattered all over the place. And that corner of that farm is just a sandy, it's a really sandy part of the property anyway. So if it was good farmland, maybe we wouldn't do it, but there wasn't much there. I mean, that's why they call it Sand Hill Trail, because that's what that is. So, anyway, thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for?
Yeah, I guess I would. I think the restoration bond should be increased by $30,000. I don't say you could get anywhere with $10,000 moving 17 feet of dirt from one side to the other. There's a humongous pile of concrete.
How much did you say?
$30,000.
Okay, because it's based on how much work they need to do to complete the project, and most of the extraction work is completed, so you're talking about shoring up the edges. Again, there's going to be some extraction work to take out the sand, but it's primarily just, they're going to be doing some fill, I guess, for the front part. That and then
when I
working
have
on the slope
done, can't get very much done for $10,000. Mm. That's my deal. I mean, taking a look at it, it's just There's a lot of work being done down there.
So are you suggesting we increase it to 40,000 for the bond, or the bond to 30,000?
Increase it to 40.
Increase it to 40.
I just don't want to see a project like this. I mean, I know they started jackhammering on one of the piers yesterday or the day before when I was out there. So I know they've had problems that, you know, I don't know budget-wise where they're at, but it's lingered on much longer than the dates that I had originally heard.
Yeah, it was supposed to be done the end of December, and we administratively extended it through the end of May. And then had communication with them again, and that's why we thought it was the right thing to bring it back to the Board of Adjustment. But Quinn, do you want to address the restoration work that's involved?
The delays in the project I could go on for a long time with. There's a lot of submittals and a lot of shop drawings and a lot of things to develop the structure that we're doing right now. There's a lot of delays in the bearings for the top of the piers for the structure. In the mix of all of it, there was a crossover with survey that placed some anchor bolts out of place, and that's what we're currently redoing now because we only had an eighth inch of tolerance, and some of them were a quarter inch or a half inch out based off of where survey landed to what was designed for the bearings. Otherwise, we had intended on, we were actually on our original schedule, we would have had the project done last year, and we wouldn't even be here at all. But that's what delayed that, and we ended up pouring piers into the winter. The bond, I mean, as far as the material, it's pretty much hauling the one side around to the other side and finishing it off. I mean, that's up to you, but I don't see any issues with it. So, we're gonna get it going as soon as we can here, and we're just waiting for a few odds and ends things to get done, and we're gonna start closing up the borrow pit, and that's pretty much is our intention in the permit right now, is just to close it up, to not take any more than the 200 yards out of sand and replace that back too. So
the 200 yard comes out as soon as possible.
We'll just go down and dig it out and put it in a pile and use it on the, we cover the interstate before we run the cranes across and we put mats on because it keeps the concrete from breaking.
Right.
And it keeps the interstate clean, and that's really all it's for.
So I thought I read that the sand goes back in after you're done?
We can either put it back in or haul it off site, or it depends where we're at when that's done. And I mean, either or. We could have got the sand across the road from Hallett's for that, but we just figured since it's still there and since we'd waited, we'd pull out a couple hundred yards and use it and bring it back or just dispose of it to another borrow site or over across the road or somewhere else. So,
just as a point of comparison with PCI's borrow pit, which is approximately 5 acres, they did provide a $5,000 bond for that. So it's maybe 4.6 to 5 acres on that one. It's a little bit smaller, but the bond was $5,000.
Right, and it's really, the focus is restoration. So all the heavy-duty extraction is supposed to be completed. So it's really just, you know, detailed work at that stage, usually.
Well, it's just a time where I guess when there's several things that didn't get accomplished. I mean, the slope, we're too close to the road, the slope is steep, should be 5-1. I mean, in the construction world, I don't know why you would overdig 17 feet, but it's steep, miss the 5-1, leave the center in, there's a mound of concrete there. I'm not saying that anything's going to go awry. Mm-hmm. It just would be nice to have some funding there if it did.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an insurance policy. I have a tendency to agree. Luke has some violations here that they can correct. And it carries on at least I know the bond's a little higher, but like I said, we've got some violations.
There's, erosion control that wasn't put in place. We've got weeds that are there that have been recently sprayed, which is good. But, so I'm just looking out for the beauty. Because I think it is going to be beautiful.
If the plan is
completed, and it's going to, I think it will be visible from I-35 as well, headed northbound. Mm-hmm. So it would be unfortunate if it ended up being a drawn out, we can't get this where it needs to be because funding is not there.
Right.
I'm going to ask a question that technically you've been talking about an 8-acre lake. This gentleman mentioned that it will probably end up being 4. So is who's
400 by, you do the math times 2, it's closer to 8.
Just a fraction under 8.
Between 7 and 8 acres.
About 8 acres.
Okay.
Is that the total area you're talking about? Or the water area? I think you're talking the whole area there, not talking the water.
Maybe a little less with just the water, but.
So what is the 8 by 435? That's not the water. That's like the upper berm, the 800 by 435?
Yeah, initially it was going to be 400 by 435 and 2 pits, and then the center area, which is going to be extracted. So from the edge of the pit, which will be the berm, to the far edge of the pit, which will also be a berm.
Right.
That'll
be close to 8 acres.
Well, whatever it is, it will be.
Yeah.
That's their thing when they get done. I think the question we've got is if we want to approve what they've submitted or if we want to make a condition on it from our board standpoint. So.
And I guess. Where are you coming up with $30,000 more versus just doubling the bond in order to insure a little bit more, but maybe not penalize too much?
Well, I don't know what it exactly it takes to increase a bond from 10 to 40.
Okay.
This guy may know.
We'll have to request a new one, I would think.
Yeah, you'd have to request a new one. Insurance policy.
Yeah, I mean, bond is if they don't restore to ours to the specification.
Yeah, it's for the county to use in case they don't complete what they've agreed to do.
I mean, the only time that's going to get used is if they default on doing what they're supposed to do, correct?
We do the site inspection. If everything meets our requirements, it gets released back to them.
I would go on doubling the bond because for doubling the pit.
Yeah.
You'd
be okay.
Yeah.
I think that would be
that's reasonable.
I just didn't know you look at a double in the paperwork and the process and the cost doesn't really minimal versus, a 20-40. This is just a lot of work. I mean, I understand these guys with the big rigs, they can move in and...
Yeah, the equipment's there.
Right. They can do a lot of work. But, actually, there's not much there now. Well...
It's right across the street.
Yeah. So
it would be action alternative number 2 then. This would be approval with conditions. The condition would be that the bond amount for the restoration be increased from the current $10,000 to
$20,000. I move that we accept the number 2 with the condition that the restoration bond be increased to $20,000.
You have a motion for a second?
Second.
Motion out of Brecky, second out of Youngberg. Roll call vote, please.
Brecky.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. BAR0218, fully variance request. This is
Amelia. Yep. So this one is a variance request. Front setbacks, there's an existing dwelling and a few accessory structures on a parcel located at 55789 Oak Bend Road in Huxley. It's an 8-acre parcel zoned A1 agricultural, and the future land use is shown as rural residential. The variance is, there's two variance requests essentially. So it's a 23-foot variance for a portico, and an 8.5-foot variance for an addition on the west side of the dwelling. Both variances are to the front setback, which is 50 feet, measured from the right-of-way line. And just a little bit of information on front yard setbacks and their purpose. They provide uniform locations of dwellings and structures, adequate separation of the road and utilities, and space for road maintenance and utility maintenance. This dwelling, the existing dwelling, was built in 1946. This is prior to Story County's adoption of our land development regulations and setback requirements. And so when the dwelling was built, it had an approximate setback of 45 feet, and so that's considered legal nonconforming. Typically, with nonconforming structures, they are permitted to be enlarged or altered so long as they do not further encroach on a required setback. In 2001, an addition was constructed on the west side, and the portico or carport was also constructed without a zoning permit. And the addition was constructed to maintain the angle of the dwelling, however, or the orientation of the dwelling. However, the dwelling was not constructed parallel to the road right-of-way, and so the addition did further encroach on the front setback. Based on staff's review, we went out to the site. It wasn't evident, the angle of the dwelling. When you're on site, the road does slightly curve or begin to curve in front of the dwelling, but it is evident from aerial photos. The addition's purpose was to make the dwelling accessible to relatives in wheelchairs. The living room is located in the addition, but previously there were stairs and a stoop into the house. And then the portico was built to cover the driveway over the new entrance, and it extends approximately 17 feet past the dwelling. We became aware of the encroachment when the property owner applied for a zoning permit to construct an attached garage on the east side of the dwelling, and we reached out at that point because there were these issues and came to the conclusion that if a variance was requested, the garage addition could be permitted. And the garage addition does not further encroach onto the front setback. It's located on the eastern side of the dwelling, which is the side of the dwelling that's actually farthest from the right-of-way and front setback line. This is an aerial image of the house. So you can see the portico extends from the front of the dwelling here. There's a slight angle to the dwelling, and this westernmost portion just to the west of the portico is the addition that the variance request is for as well. And this is a sketch from the assessor's office. They identify additions on sketches as well, so I thought this was helpful. So, again, highlighted here, you have the addition that encroaches further than this original portion of the house, as well as the portico. Regarding surrounding land use, the property is located on Oak Bend Road, which is a gravel county road, has a typical 66-foot wide right-of-way. Oak Bend Road connects 560th Avenue to the city of Huxley, kind of where the wastewater treatment plant is in Huxley. And it does curve slightly. It's not directly east-west oriented. And the city of Huxley is located approximately 1,000 feet to the west of the subject property. Oak Bend Road was renamed from Oak Boulevard in 2010. Huxley had a development inside of the city's limits, the Meadow Lane subdivision, and they wanted the road's orientation to be straight inside the city's limits, and so the road was essentially broken up so that the portion, and you'll see this on an aerial image, inside of the city is straight, and then there is Oak Bend Road now, which kind of comes into the city diagonally, and then there's a north-south street down. The city is nearby, you know, 1,000 feet to the west, but this subject property is not designated as part of Hux's urban growth area in our future land use plan. And so this is Oak Bend Road. You can see 560th Avenue here, and the city of Huxley is this, it's hard to see on the projector, red line here. So it incorporates some of this agricultural field here, and then here is the subdivision. So Oak Bend Road, there was a diagonal previously, but now you can see it's straight within the city. This is the future land use map. So you can see a lot of the parcels to the north of Oak Bend Road are designated as rural residential in our C2C plan, West Indian Creek, and there is some floodplain in the area as well. And then south of Oak Bend Road, you do have agricultural conservation area and A1 agricultural district zoning. Of the 21 parcels with frontage on Oak Bend Road, there are 14 single-family dwellings. The average year the dwellings were built is 1982. Again, the subject property's dwelling was built much prior to this. The other dwellings, with the exception of one, again, were built after the adoption of zoning. Only one other dwelling in the area was constructed prior to zoning, and this dwelling meets setbacks. It's on a larger lot. There is one mobile home located on a parcel in the neighborhood, which was originally permitted in the 90s as a mobile home for elder care, temporary elder care, and it looks like this has since fallen into an illegal non-conforming use that doesn't meet the required setbacks, and they haven't renewed the permit for elder care. And there is also one pole barn that was built in 1900 that does not appear to meet front setbacks, but otherwise, with the exception of those two structures, the neighborhood is generally legal conforming with the setbacks, the front setbacks. Of the adjacent parcels, they're similarly sized parcels with dwellings. There is a large agricultural parcel to the south that's about 36.19 net acres. To the north is a parcel that is wooded, and then there is one smaller parcel to the east that's 1.18 net acres and has a dwelling. Just a note on side setbacks to adjacent properties. From the east property line to the portico, it's approximately 100 feet. We would require typically a 10-foot side setback, so it far exceeds that. And the side setback from the property line to the west from the dwelling's western extent is approximately 330 feet. This is looking west on Oak Bend Road, southwest, and you can see the meadow lane development in the city of Huxley here and the agricultural field. This is looking east on Oak Bend Road. This is looking north at the dwelling, so here is the western addition, and this is the portico. This is looking west on the dwelling and the portico, and this is the east view of the addition and the portico, looking east. To grant a variance, the board must conclude that all legal principles are met. The first legal principle relates to a finding of unnecessary hardship. To make that finding, the board has to conclude that there's the three-prong test. Find a necessary hardship is met. So the first part of that three-prong test is that the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if only used for a purpose allowed in that zone. So regarding the variance addition for the dwelling, staff finds that this principle is met. The applicant has indicated the addition was necessary to make entry and exit into the home accessible. It contains the living room, but stairs did previously inhibit access. And so, again, staff concludes that as the addition ensures the home is accessible to, you know, current owners, family, and guests, without the variance, reasonable return would not be established, as use of the dwelling for all users would be inhibited. Regarding the portico, however, staff finds that it provides protection from the elements, wind, snow, and rain when accessing the home, and this is not necessary to establish reasonable return on the property. You know, with an exposed door or entrance on the home, reasonable return would be established as the dwelling itself is permitted to be located on the property. It has a legal non-conforming setback. And so if the variance for the portico were denied, it could be reduced in size and match the setback of the dwelling, which would leave an approximately 4-foot cover over the front door and maybe additional roof hang. The support structures and beams would have to be in line with the front setback or the front extent of the dwelling. Alternatively, staff thought of a few other options. Perhaps the portico could be constructed in front of the existing garage. There is a stoop there, but that would provide a covered entrance and may provide a little bit more room for the portico because the garage is set back farther than the rest of the dwelling. And there is the permit they recently applied for is for a new attached garage on the east side of the home, garages do provide similar protected access as well. The second prong of the finding of a necessary hardship is that the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances. For the dwelling, staff has determined that the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances. These circumstances would have existed even if a permit was obtained for the addition. The existing dwelling was built prior to the adoption of zoning and was not built parallel to the front property line. So subsequently, when the addition was constructed to maintain the same angled orientation, it further encroached on the setback. And the property owner, again, did not construct the dwelling originally. There wasn't zoning or zoning permit requirements at that time. Regarding the plight of the owner and the variance request, however, again, a permit was not obtained, and the portico does encroach 17 feet past the dwelling. And so it can be concluded that the plight of the owner is not due to unique circumstances in this case. The third prong is that the use be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. As we saw, the character of the locality is largely residential, and the dwelling setback was established prior to most of the residential development in the area and zoning. And so the addition maintains the same angled orientation to the road of the original dwelling. It only encroaches 3 to 4 feet past this original setback. It's not immediately evident when you're on site either. And there is a large side setback from adjacent properties. So it's not anticipated that the granting of the variance for the addition will impact adjacent properties or the character of the locality. However, for the portico, the subject property and properties east of Huxley on Oak Bend Road, they're not designated as Huxley's urban growth area, but there has been development inside the city, which is approximately 1,000 feet to the west of the subject property. Setbacks provide uniformity in residential areas, and maintaining uniform, efficient development is important. It's important if future growth does occur. The encroachment of the portico is approximately 17 feet greater than that of the dwelling, again, and so granting of the variance may set a precedent for future variances to allow similar encroachment on front and setbacks. So that would alter the essential character of the locality. Our second criteria for granting the variance is that it is not contrary to the public interest. There are several different public interests in enforcing the bulk requirements for front setbacks and the Story County Land Development Regulations for building separation, uniform location, light and air between buildings, separation from roadways. But as well, in the A1 Agricultural District, the intent is to preserve the rural character of the area by limiting most non-farm dwellings to large lots. Similarly, the public interest in enforcing the policies related to the C2C comprehensive plan is ensuring orderly and efficient future growth. Principles for the rural residential area specifically include that new development shall be sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area. So regarding the addition to the dwelling and the variance request, the existing dwelling and lot are meet an exception to permit non-farm residential development on smaller lots in the A1 Agricultural District. It is considered an illegally established lot of record, and the variance would not encroach substantially further than the existing setback of the original dwelling, perhaps 3 to 4 feet, and it does so to maintain the existing orientation of the dwelling. regarding the portico, the encroachment of 17 feet past that of the dwelling does not maintain the original character or setback of the dwelling. And again, we are close to the city of Huxley, 1,000 feet to the west, and there is development occurring inside of the city of Huxley, adjacent to its corporate boundary there. And so again, setbacks maintain uniformity in residential areas, and given the future growth potential, granting a variance may allow for future variances that allow encroachment on front property lines. But regarding the current rural character of the area, permitting a variance that would allow this type of encroachment would also not be consistent with, a low-density agricultural area either. And finally, see the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and Story County Land Development Regulations are protected. And this is kind of similar to the previous prong. However, the Story County Development Plan and Land Development Regulations intent is to maintain character and protect the county's natural resources and allow limited compatible residential development. The proposed variance will not allow for denser residential development, impact natural resources, or remove farmland from production. So similar to the previous points, it can be concluded that the variance for the addition on the dwelling is within the spirit of the County Comprehensive Plan and Land Development Regulations. However, the variance for the portico may not be within the intent because of that 17 feet greater encroachment than that of the dwelling, and given the need to of the Land Development Regulations to protect public health, safety, and welfare. We have setbacks from roads for those reasons. And again, granting the variance may set a future precedent for the area as the area develops. We route it, this variance request, to county departments. The auditor's office noted that the overlay of the property lines, right-of-way, and aerial imagery did not appear to be accurate on our Beacon website. We agree, and the property owner did provide the setbacks based on the center line of the roadway. We asked the property owner to provide the setbacks for this request. And we also routed this to the city of Huxley and Cambridge. They are within 2 miles. The city of Huxley hasn't provided an official comment yet, but we did have some conversations with the city administrator. He noted that the city of Huxley has a 30-foot front setback. And so in the case of the portico, that 30-foot front setback, it's measured from right-of-way lines, would not be met. You know, inside the city where you have subdivisions, oftentimes the right-of-way line and the front property line are the same line. But on Oak Bend Road, you'll recall that the right-of-way line encroaches 33 feet onto the property. We also mailed letters to property owners within a quarter mile and received no comments at the time of writing this report. So in summary, the portico and the addition were constructed without zoning permits in 2001, and we became aware of the encroachment when a permit was requested to construct an attached garage on the east side of the dwelling, which was issued and after the property owner applied for a variance to correct the existing issues on the property. The dwelling addition was constructed to match the existing orientation of the dwelling, which was built prior to the adoption of zoning, and thus encroaches further on the front setback. Based on staff's review, the further encroachment was not noticeable. However, the portico's encroachment is 17 feet past the dwelling. The addition for the dwelling was made to create an accessible space. Previously, there were stoops and a step that inhibited access to the dwelling. And the subject property is located near to the city of Huxley, approximately 1,000 feet to the east. And if a variance for the portico were denied, it may be able to be reduced in size so that the columns or supports match the setback of the dwelling, leaving approximately 4 feet and additional roof overhang. And so again, for the two separate variance requests, the first one is an 8.5-foot variance request to the required front setback for the dwelling addition. Staff does recommend approval. And then for the 23-foot variance to the required front setback for the portico, staff does recommend denial of that variance request. So if you have any questions for staff, I can take those.
Questions for the staff?
Do you know who built the portico? I mean, whose responsibility?
Oh, the property owner.
Okay. He didn't, they didn't hire anybody.
It was under their ownership. Mm-hmm. But you're asking who the contractor was?
Right.
Oh. I didn't ask that question, but you could ask the property owner, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a contractor?
Let them come.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions for the staff in their analysis? All right.
No, this is our first time to deal with a variance, and we apologize if we're not totally polished in our presentation. I didn't know I could do a PowerPoint. I did want to, first of all, thank you.
State your name.
Oh, I'm so sorry. My name is Patricia Foley, and my husband, Leonard Foley. We are here to present our information, if you don't mind.
And your address, please?
55789 Oak Bend Road, Huxley. We wanted to first say thank you to the Story County Planning and Development staff for their recommendation that the variance for the West Addition be granted. We appreciate the report. It was well done. However, regarding our poor portico, or otherwise known as a carport, we did note that there were several discrepancies in the staff report, and we would like to provide clarification with your permission. Thank you for that opportunity to present to you. We, number one, never intentionally fail to comply with the regulations. Both of us are proud to be good citizens of Story County. In 2001, 17 years ago, we hired an architect and licensed builder to add on to our house. It was Hathaway Construction, as I recall, and they are no longer in business. Since that time, they are not building. We thought the builder would necessarily have such a permit. If we received a copy, it was lost in basement flooding. We have since put in footing tile and some pumps to prevent such flooding again at a considerable cost, but certainly it was worth it if you saw the deluge today. Second, the existing dwelling consists of several additions, side entry, garage, back room, made to the original structure by previous owners. We believe the original part of the house was built well before 1946. The house foundation is made of stacked stone. As we understand it, this is a process used in the early 1900s and late 1800s. Also, the stairs that are only 20 inches wide and steps that are 8 inches to 9 inches high indicate old construction practices. The abstract for our property indicates buildings on the property were improved, repaired, and I quote there, by the then resident as early as before January 1920. A series of husband and wife residents have been living on the acreage since at least that time, and presumably they lived in a portion of the house. In fact, anecdotally, in about 1990, Leonard received an elderly visitor who said he was born in the house at the turn of the century. Apparently, at least a portion of the house has been around a while. In fact, staff member Jerry Moore indicated it was on a lot of record traced back to 1924. So it's been in the books, but not as completely as in our abstract. The only reason I mention this is because there are peculiarities in adding on those additions that from the garage. And Leonard, if you wanted to show them a picture, the ground slopes a little. So the garage, there's a 9-inch step to get into the side entry, which was a separate addition. Then there's a 9-inch step to get into the kitchen. And there are several steps, 4 steps in the back of the house. No other access is available for a wheelchair other than that very front entrance. So the permit for the garage addition was conditional on the resolution of the variance. So we very quickly, since we wanted to get things going on the extension of the garage, we're just making it, adding on another hole. And the initial hole is quite narrow. It's for, Leonard thought, a Ford, a model Ford. Model Ford. So we're just adding another more reasonably sized hole. we submitted a document very quickly to allow us to proceed on making that extension to the garage, but the document we submitted to the staff was not complete, so they did not get the whole story. So we have the following additional information to share that was not in the original submission to the staff. The staff report says the front yard setbacks are enforced to protect overall health, safety, and welfare. We ask you to consider our portico setback as meeting all of the intentions of a front setback stated in that report. And, Leonard, did you share all the photos of the house and the portico? Because I will mention that now. There are numerous examples in our neighborhood that do not have uniform location of dwellings and structures. And some actually have less setback than our portico.
Okay. Let's see. There's a fair amount of distance. And what we've got is not obstructing. Mm-hmm.
So you've seen then the examples in the neighborhood of that differ from a uniform compliance with setback. And also you've seen the pictures of our property wherein there are flags from Consumers Energy showing where they will lay their electrical lines, and then also they've marked where Alliant Energy, the gas company, has previously laid their lines. I think you can see there is good separation of road, good enough, sufficient separation of road, right-of-way, motor vehicles, and buildings. Taking the portico down would not significantly affect that separation. They would still have the same separation. It would just be there was a driveway and a car parked there, or maybe several cars. There is adequate space for road maintenance for all of the 17 years that the structure has been in place. To our knowledge, no complaint or problem has ever occurred as a result of its existence. There is adequate space for utilities, ditches, and other features for drainage and green space. Even now, Consumers Energy, as I mentioned, has their flags up showing where they will soon be placing lines, and then where the Alliant Energy Company has previously worked. Our portico does not pose a problem or interfere with that activity. According to Section 92.034 of the Story County Land Development Regulations, certain legal principles are considered in deciding to grant a variance request, as mentioned in Amelia's report. There are several definite and unnecessary hardships for us if the portico is taken down. The staff report indicates that a portico could be constructed in front of the existing or soon-to-be-extended garage. But this is not a solution because the steps up from the garage and the side entry are 9 inches, so it could not be navigated by a person in a wheelchair. The only possible access for a wheelchair is through the front door into the addition. Setting the supports back to match the dwelling would not allow adequate space to maneuver a car and a wheelchair. Also, significant expense and damage to the structure could be generated by this approach, not easily borne by two senior citizens, one 74 years of age and retired, and the other 70 and soon to be retired by the end of this year. In addition, the portico serves another very important human health, safety, and welfare principle, providing a fire exit for those asleep in the second-story bedroom. Until the portico was built and the addition made, there was no fire exit for those caught upstairs. Since its construction, should a fire consume the ground floor, there is a portable folding ladder in the upstairs closet that allows for rapid and safe exit through the door opening onto the portico. Put it over the railing. We taught our 10-year-old daughter how to use it in an emergency. 3, the staff report states that allowing the Foley variance will set a precedent for the neighborhood and alter its essential character. In fact, as the photos indicated, there are numerous instances of front setbacks that are less than that of the portico setback.
This is just East Coast 5 block, city block project. And this is another picture of the property. And this one is right adjacent to it, and there's two columns built right out on the shoulder of the road. Or not the shoulder, but the shoulder of the ditch. There's brick columns right there. And then this one is on the same road that the equipment is parked next to. There's a metal pole barn that's less than 50 feet back.
This is
the last
city? Just
oh. It's like a quarter mile being 300 feet. And then this is a picture of what the one is with all the equipment parked right. This is the shoulder of the room. Yes, it is. Room. And then the garage right there. And it's far from the setback. So there are examples of keeping from that setback or whatever, right in the setback.
So the photos that Leonard has shown you indicate there are numerous instances of front setbacks less than our setback, our portico setback. They also show that there is no one essential character, if you will, other than that we enjoy, all of us in our neighborhood, a rural lifestyle in all its many variations. None of those particular photos you saw are the same or nearly the same. We have a single dwelling home, like our neighbors, that also have rural outbuildings, sheds, barns, etc., that preserve that rural ideal. Our next-door neighbor has columns similar to ours, though not as tall, and they're up on his property line. So is it the columns that are the problem? Well, those are up even closer than ours. Granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest, we believe. After 17 years of continuous use, there have not been any complaints or problems with its use, not from neighbors or officials of any kind. There is sufficient building separation from roadways for inhabitant and motorist safety, as well as access to utilities and the right of way. from our perspective, the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and Story County Land Development Regulations are protected by us, as indicated by our actions to acquire a permit and to honor the setback for the proposed garage extension. We share the goals of maintaining Story County's agricultural character and protecting its natural resources. Leonard is a member of the ISU Story County Extension Council and the 4-H Foundation Board. Patricia, myself, is a longtime veterinary medical officer and risk manager at the National Centers for Animal Health and AIMS. I'm also chair of the Institutional Biosafety Committee for two of the centers. And I have professional and private concern for public health, safety, and welfare. Both of us are members of the Story County Conservation Partners as well. In summary, we respectfully ask that the 17-year-old portico or carport structure remain in place as is. If it is removed or reduced, it will be unnecessary hardship, will not improve any one specific public interest, and not provide a significant benefit to the Story County Development Plan. Thank you. Those are my comments, our comments. But if you have questions.
Board questions? Ms. Hollis? Okay. Comments and comments from the staff?
Yeah. So, again, we, in our review, noted those nonconformities in the neighborhood as well. When we receive zoning permit requests, we do review compliance of other structures on the property, but otherwise we also operate on a complaint basis in terms of enforcing those kinds of things. So just to clarify that. Additionally, we did review, let me go back to this. I think this is just a helpful point of clarification, this drawing. Okay. So the 46 year was from the assessor's records. They keep records of when dwellings were constructed. And so that's the year we used based on the assessor's records. This bolded outline in the center here does appear to be what was the original dwelling. And so Mrs. Foley is correct. There does appear to be several additions. But in our review, these additions, and specifically this addition, just east of the portico, do appear to have occurred prior to the adoption of zoning. So again, they're legal nonconforming with regards to the setback. So just to clarify that, we did look at, you know, how these additions have occurred and when, and it did appear that specifically this addition was done prior to the adoption of zoning, so it would be considered legal. Nonconforming setback. This addition just behind the portico is behind that setback, so while it does appear to be done later, maybe as part of the west addition, it doesn't encroach further, so that's why that wasn't included as part of the variance request either. And just a clarification on the unnecessary hardship requirement that reasonable return cannot be established on the property. Generally, what that looks like is in the case of, that without the variance, a principal permanent use such as a dwelling can't be established on the property. And so in this case, because the dwelling can be established without the variance for the portico, that's why staff found that that principle was not met. With regards to the development and the impact of the variance setting precedent, staff's analysis was for the future development potential of the neighborhood, and given that, again, the portico may encroach on future setbacks if this area was ever annexed, and the 30-foot setback applied in the city of Huxley as well. And then regarding Finally, the ornamental features on the columns on the adjacent property, there is an exception for ornamental features with regards to front setbacks in the land development regulations. So that's why we did not bring up that in the staff report as one of the encroachments on the front setbacks in the neighborhood.
So what you're saying, ornamental features?
Yeah, I believe you're talking about columns at the end of the driveway.
Yeah.
So those would be considered ornamental features, and we don't, the setback requirements are accepted for those kinds of features.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to point out, too, is, as Amelia mentioned, you know, when we get a request in to do an improvement, whether it be an addition to the house or a garage, whatever it is, we look at the entire property and make sure that everything is in compliance. Our position, the way we approach this, may have been differently if these improvements weren't done by the property owner, the current property owners that requested the addition to the garage. As I said, this is, we understand that it's been several years ago. They hired a professional who, again, we have no record of any permits being submitted for either project. And so we have a responsibility to the general public also. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we thought that we needed to respond to it.
Thank you. Any questions for it? Comments?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Right ahead.
My name is Steve Quick. I'm at 55647 Oak Bend Road.
Ann Quick.
Same address. We're neighbors. I also happen to be the developer for Middle Lane Subdivision that you've been talking about. But that has nothing to do with this. Is anybody that knows me, I'm a black and white guy. You know, it's either right or it's wrong. And we're looking at an addition that is a very, very good-looking addition. It's a very nice-looking home in an area that doesn't necessarily have nice-looking stuff just down the road. It's not been an issue. It's not in the way as everything's been stated. I definitely appreciate all the work that the staff's gone to. You've done a lot of work there. But I've been behind a number of variance requests, and we would just like to support their request for a variance on their carport. We don't see that it's an issue to the area, and in fact, they have a very nice home. Thank you.
I would like to point out one other thing that really stands out to me. Our home is farther to the west, and our... Are you looking for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're right at the bend.
We're right at
that
bend.
This one?
And they're down a little farther at the other bend.
Yes, here.
Okay. Where our house is, our front setbacks are right where they normally should be, right at the edge of the ditch. And if you look back at the picture you had of that, for some crazy reason, it's that purple line. Why is it so far from the edge of the ditch and so far from the road? The setback is unbelievably far back from the road. So their portico is not anywhere close to the road. It might be close to the setback, but the setback is far from the road. It goes at an odd angle. In fact, our next door neighbor, their front yard and their front flower bed is on the roadside of the setback. And it's well into their yard. So that setback is in a very odd space in regards to the road itself. So from our point of view, they are the most well-kept yard, well-kept home, very nice. There's no need to tear down something that has not been a problem.
Any further comments?
Just again, we understand that the aerial image is not overlaid accurately in this area, and that's why we asked the property owner to provide the setbacks from the center of the road in this case. It's an interesting offset that is going on. So.
All right. Any further questions before we close? Okay.
Do we need to discuss?
Well, that's what I said. We're going to now.
Okay.
I built a lot of things and had to deal with a lot of rules and regulations. I don't think these people would be coming forth for a garage permit if they had any idea that they were not in non-compliance way back then. So, since this is a 17-year structure and there was no intention for them to do something improper, I guess without knowing, and I'm making an assumption, I know it falls on the contractor at that time. And maybe the contractor made an assumption, an incorrect assumption, and took the setback from the middle of the road versus some of the lineage there. But anyway, regardless, I would prefer, since there is no major issues concerning this, and I do feel that asking them to redo their portico is a financial burden of some degree. I would like to see, and so that it doesn't set precedent, there's always the grandfather rule. And I don't know if that can be done, if something can be grandfathered in a regard.
You're speaking to something that was constructed under maybe a previous ordinance that met the requirements at the time it was constructed, and then the jurisdiction, in this case the county, passed an ordinance that made it legal when it was built, but not conforming. This is the case where the standards have not changed. It's been a 50-foot setback, and it was constructed at a distance that's, the portico is 27.5 feet. And so if the variance is granted, we showed you across the road, that's agricultural farm field. If that area gets developed, this will be your front yard setback standard. It will be pretty difficult if somebody were to want to build something at that same setback and not permit that as well. So it does set precedent.
I wouldn't mind also these people if they came and requested a permit for their garage addition, and we discover this, and now we're taking it one step further. If I was one of their neighbors and I was sitting in there, I'm not going to come tell the county what I'm going to do. That is a and obviously that some of the stuff out here in the county. The other thing I question, the construction part of it, I've worked on a lot of old houses, additions, whatever. And I've taken that down, could be some financial hardship as well as some construction hardship at this point in time. But I do understand the precedence part that we're talking about here.
Well, and again, the house was constructed prior to zoning, which is 1958. The non-conforming provisions in the ordinance allow for improvements to be made to buildings that don't meet the setback, but you are to maintain whatever that distance is. In this case, what was the setback for the original portion of the house?
45 feet.
About 45 feet. So you can add on, but you have to assure that you're going to maintain that 45-foot setback. And we think that was probably the intent with the addition on the west side of the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, we recommend approval of a variance for the addition.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we're looking at two completely separate,
yeah.
Two separate issues.
Yeah, right. Just to clarify that.
Yeah.
And how much over the line is the portico?
It's set back
15 feet.
it extends 17 feet from the dwelling, and the required setback is 50 feet, and so the setback is 27 feet from the front property line, so the variance is for the other 23 feet that would typically be required. That's how it works.
Mr. Quick, what is the variance in Huxley, or what is the setback requirements in Huxley City?
30 feet in town.
The city administrator also indicated that.
Excuse me. Okay.
And if this sets precedent, what's wrong with moving that line?
Well, it's A1 agricultural district, and if you're building today, there's a 50-foot minimum setback.
Mm-hmm. Moving the line that is in the right-of-way.
Well, I'm just saying, if it sets precedent that people then can build closer to.
Mm-hmm. Again, you know, it's for safety, you know, vehicles on the roadway, distance from roadway utilities, roadway maintenance, those kinds of things, separation between homes as well.
Yeah, also, it wouldn't be an automatic, you know, if this variance were granted, that anybody who builds can build at. They would have to come before the Board of Adjustment
to get a
similar setback, but
mm-hmm. I just think it's
this would be a
comparison. I just think it's a burden to put that on after 17 years to say you have to come and you have to change your house.
One thing that you could consider if the board is considering approving it, maybe sunset it or you know, for so many years or until such time. I'm just thinking out loud.
The property is sold.
Yeah, something like that, possibly.
It's the question also, I think there's still the question of the contractor that built that. I've also had contractors do something. I assumed that they did some things, but if I had to lay my hands on paperwork.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we deal with property owners, not the contractors.
I understand, but I also know how things go.
Do we want to pass the variance for the garage or the garage part and we continue the discussion
let's please pass the variance for the addition.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we see those for the addition?
I move that we accept number one for the variance, the addition on the west side of the property.
So moved.
A motion out of Brecky, a second out of Youngberg. Roll call vote, please.
McGill.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
As we move into this next issue, I might remind you there's only three of us, and so we have to be unanimous to do any of the activity. So.
I have a question for the owners. Trying to come up with alternative scenarios and stuff. If the carport's already 17 years and not knowing how well built or not built, what condition is it in?
It's in good shape.
It's in good shape.
Yeah. Okay. And it's not used for anything other than a carport.
Right.
I hang Christmas lights up there in the Christmas
I hope light. So. And my question, though, too, then comes back, if you're asking them to remove the carport or make a smaller one, are you also going to then require them to change the driveway? Will that be an encroachment as it stands?
The driveway?
Yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't do that unless that's something that the Board of Adjustment wants to do.
Oh, okay. Just a couple questions.
I was just thinking out loud for options.
Yeah. I guess I would like, I don't know what sunsetting entails, or is it individual?
Give them so many years to remove it or possibly allow them to keep it until such time they sell the property, which could be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever that might be.
I think oftentimes you see that where you know, everything needs to be brought up to code at a certain point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely, when I read through it, thought of something like that, to where it's like, okay, I know that would affect the value come sale time, but at least it would be less painful until then.
Yeah, it would, you know, whatever the Board of Adjustments action is, that gets recorded and it would run with the land. So anyone that's doing their due diligence would find that record, that there is that requirement. Plus, it should be communicated by the property owners.
This is a really important decision for these people, and I don't feel I want to make that at this point. I guess I want to know further options. And you say there's no, we can't grandfather anything?
No.
Okay.
What we could do is we could entertain a motion that the portico stays until the property is sold.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't foresee them selling in a day or two, that any hardship that they have on them. You know, there's, for example, the several rural properties out here right now that are county sanitarium comes in, we have to change the septic systems and that sort of thing, but they're not changed until the property is sold.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it will be with them.
Yeah, and I've had several rental properties where things have needed updated upon purchase or upon sale. So it doesn't seem too out of line to me.
I think what we're saying is we feel that since things weren't done as they should have been 17 years ago, it's a situation where it needs special attention and maybe some meeting of the minds. And so I think maybe that might be the right way to go.
Awesome.
At this point in time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great option.
Mm-hmm. Sounds reasonable.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion with this.
So that would actually be two,
okay,
with conditions, and then you'd come up with the condition.
The condition,
yeah.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to accept condition two, or number two, with the condition that the portico be left as is until further, or until upon the sale of the property.
Second. I have a motion out of Dunberg, a second out of Brecky. Roll call vote, please.
Brecky.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It gives you time.
It gives you time.
Yeah.
It gives you time to figure.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. But I really appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah. And I said, well, I'm going to keep my original. I've already made it.
I'll make it quick.
Yeah. Anyone object? No. CUPO 618 Manette.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is a construction and demolition landfill site. It's a pretty broad use. Specifically, it's for stockpiles of concrete and asphalt. And there's actually a recommended condition to limit it to that use so we don't get other construction and demolition stuff on the property. The property is, it's two properties. One is A2 Agribusiness, one is A1 Agricultural, and they're also used for mineral extraction. It's at Ames South Pit, which is operated by Hallett. The property owner is Manette, though, who's the applicant. So we're just south of South Dayton and Southeast 18th here, kind of southwest of the intersection of 30 and 35. The CUP is, again, to permit asphalt pavement and concrete for local road projects. Crushing of materials is also proposed to occur. The South Pala area is existing. It's approximately 4.6 acres. And again, it's owned by Manats, and the stockpiles are Manats stockpiles. We first learned about the stockpiling activity when we reviewed a conditional use permit for Hallett Materials. The Hallett Materials stockpiles from the mineral extraction use are located just to the south, and Hallett Materials wanted to expand their stockpiling area. And in the review of that request, we said, hey, did you already expand to the north? And the response was, no, those are actually Manats stockpiles, which don't relate to the extraction use. They're separate local road construction project materials. And so at which point we reached out to Manats and requested a conditional use permit be submitted. And the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval with conditions of this. So here are the proposed stockpiles. You can see the Hallett Materials stockpiles are here just to the south. They look similar. So there's five existing stockpiles there, and they are from Highway 30 and Interstate 35 and Highway 69 and other road construction projects. They vary in width, but the maximum height will be 40 feet. Activity may occur on the site only when materials need it for other road construction projects, so that could be 4 to 5 times a year maximum. And they do some routine condensing of the stockpiles on the site to help minimize flow of sediment and keep the site clean. So there will be a loader on the site. And then crushing may occur twice a year, but they have an air permit for the crusher that they would bring in. And they also have a built-in water spray bar system on that crushing machine as well. This is the site plan they submitted. The portable crushing machine would be located here. And then the loader that would be kept on site is located on the east property line. There is a well-established tree line on the property that does provide screening. Stormwater and erosion control are addressed through the grading of the site, which actually drains into the Ames South Pit, where there is a rock berm to filter out loose sediment. And this area is mainly an extraction use area, so there's very few cars on 560th Avenue, a few more on 320 on South Dayton Avenue and Southeast 18th Street, but those are mainly related to trucks going to Hallett Materials, since 560th is a dead end south of here. It is in the floodplain of the South Skunk River, and a floodplain permit will be required. And the use was proposed to cease by the applicant when Ames South Pit mineral extraction use is discontinued. And so the restoration plan that we have on record for the Ames South Pit actually includes restoring this area as well. And so that permit is set to discontinue in 2035. So you can see the surrounding land use. This is the A2 agricultural zone property that the stockpiles are on. There are some commercial sites located in the city of Ames here. One is a former truck stop, and this it appears to be car salvage or sales. And then you do actually have another construction and demolition landfill site for road material stockpiles located over here, and an asphalt and concrete plant to be located here for some local road projects as well this summer. This isn't a natural area of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, but we do have a provision for this designation to provide opportunities for development to enhance the long-term urbanization of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, Ames Urban Fringe area, and we find that that's pretty apt to the current request for road, because it relates to road projects in the area. The C2C plan also specifically calls out the Ames Hallett Materials South Pit as an area that we would like to work with in the future and work with the City of Ames to prioritize that site for potential reuse and revitalization specifically related to conservation and recreation. And these are a few site photos. We're looking south across Highway 30. This is the car business, and you can see this established line of tree screening, which provides a decent amount of screening of the stockpiles located just to the south there. You can also see the gateway art is located in this area, but again, there is that established tree line. This is looking southeast from South Dayton Place. You can kind of see the south piles located in between the trees here. So there is a condition recommended to replace dead or dying trees to maintain the screening.
With more evergreens.
This is looking east from South Dayton Place on the site. Again, you can see the loader is located here. They were doing some condensing on the day we did site review. And this is looking east again, more at the loader and the conveyor used to condense and create the stockpiles. And so going into the standards of approval, we have standards for compatibility. Staff finds that it's adjacent to an extraction use with similar stockpiling activities. There's screening already installed, and it's a recommended condition to maintain the screening. And that this use will cease in 2035, which was recommended as a condition by the Planning and Zoning Commission, that the stockpiling be discontinued and restored at the same time as the extraction use is done so. There is also a condition to limit the breadth of uses that may be included in a construction and demolition landfill site just to stockpiling of materials such as recycled asphalt or concrete from local road projects. Regarding transition, again, we have the existing tree line and the fact that the use will cease in 2035. And we also have a strategy in the Cornerstone to Capstone plan to revitalize this area for recreation use when the extraction use has ceased. Regarding traffic, it's mainly traffic in the area related to the extraction use. There are 320 average annual cars per day on South Dayton Avenue and Southeast 18th. 16 additional trucks may be present 4 to 5 times a year, so that really won't compound much on the existing traffic levels. But staff does note that this is in close proximity to Highway 30 and Interstate 35, so if there is a road construction project that these materials are coming from or going to, the proximity will limit the impact of transportation of the materials on traffic. Regarding parking and loading, no parking is proposed. There is equipment storage that will be kept on site, and so we will need an approved floodplain permit for that, as well as an evacuation plan. And regarding signs and lighting, there's no signs or lighting proposed. Staff did have a few comments on if that those were proposed, what the requirements would be for lighting if there was a nighttime project. And just noting that internal signs for directing traffic generally do not require a permit. Regarding environmental protection, again, they condense stockpiles to minimize flow of sediment. Stormwater is taken care of by the grading of the site into the Ames South Pit. There is dust control for when crushing occurs. All roads and accesses to the site are paved, and we will require a floodplain permit and relocation plan for equipment that will not be anchored in case of flooding. If the board concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, it must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that, if completed as proposed, there is a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare, impair adequate supply of light and air, unduly increase congestion roads, diminish or impair established property values, and not be in accordance with our land development regulations or C2C plan. Staff finds that there is not a strong probability any of those aforementioned items will occur. A few points to consider. This is in line with the Ames Urban Fringe plan to permit interim development to help the long-term urbanization of the Ames Urban Fringe. There is a discontinuation date of 2035, and that's recommended as a condition along with the extraction use. There is an existing tree line, and there is relatively close access to 30 and 35, given that this relates to road construction projects, and we will require a floodplain permit. Environmental Health Department did provide a comment that they did have some concerns about the use of the term construction demolition landfill, so again, we have a recommended condition limiting the uses on the site, and we did receive a similar comment from Hallett Materials about what may be permitted under a construction and demolition landfill use permit. We routed these applications to Ames and Gilbert, as it is in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and neither had comments. So we recommend, or excuse me, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommends it. Approval with the following conditions: that only recycled asphalt and concrete materials shall be permitted to be stockpiled. Trees are replaced as necessary. A floodplain permit and evacuation plan are approved. Appropriate on-site dust control measures are provided, and that the use ceases with the discontinuation of the adjacent extraction use and is reclaimed as part of the extraction use's reclamation plan. So that would be alternative two. Do you have any questions for me?
So on the previous slide, what was number five? I think I missed.
Oops. Five?
Yeah.
That the use will cease with the extraction use, Ames, the Ames South pit that Hallett Materials uses. So
a large pit.
So that we do have an end date on there.
Okay. Which is, what's the
2035
date?
Is anticipated.
Without changing, I don't want to make it a big deal, but because it's already there, it says trees shall be replaced as necessary to maintain screening. I would like to see it be evergreens, because the other ones then don't screen it year-round.
Mm-hmm.
So if you maybe just put year-end or year-round trees, I mean, would it be...
So you're saying as they die or whatever, they should be replaced with, like, evergreens?
Yeah, type? Especially okay. If they have the option to go all the way
specify,
to,
sure.
to 2035.
But you don't want to see evergreens planted immediately, just when...
Well, no, it looked like there were a couple trees that needed to be replaced.
You're going to replace
yeah,
them.
So any replacement okay. of existing tree sure. lines should be evergreen.
Would it provide a buffer from grade to, like, yeah. 12, 15 feet, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're covered year-round.
Yeah, sure. Year-round.
Absolutely.
I mean, the,
yeah.
Like, that picture was quick, but all I could see was a lot of scraggly
yeah.
trees, and that's not really as meticulous as this county and city is about
sure.
their buffers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That means... That
so
could
if
be.
You're looking at about 2035, so we got what? Quite a few years. I mean, is
that's what I'm saying. We got plenty of time.
Is there mm-hmm. I mean, can we just require they plant them now?
Mm-hmm.
At least on the light.
I didn't have to. Since it wasn't specific at first, I'd hate to have them incur cost in taking down good trees.
I'm thinking to the north of the
existing
oh.
Oh, okay.
So that as they die out.
Yeah.
Can we show you that photo again?
Yeah.
Let's
see here.
The one that's back.
I mean, there's...
That's looking to the southeast,
yeah,
I think.
To the southeast. Yeah. The tree just to the second tree to the right of the pole looks dead. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other dying.
I just want to check one thing.
Yeah, how much property do they have?
Right, exactly.
Because if there could be a...
It looks like... The property line is
the trees.
The tree line potentially. But I will say that with the Hallett Materials expansion of the stockpiles, there was a condition that they plant trees on the eastern
okay,
side
maybe make all that.
Of the property because they hadn't done it and
there
it was required that. Before and there wasn't a the Hallett Materials does have a berm. As well, that provides additional screening. I think it's about 10 feet in height. But a berm was not required for this area because of concerns about floodwaters and the flow of water from the commercial property to the north. So I think a berming condition wouldn't necessarily be...
No, no. But we can change
yeah.
that to when they replace it, that
yeah.
they be evergreen
mm-hmm.
to provide an immediate buffer.
And year-round. A year-round buffer. That's all I...
So yeah, the horticulture guys in my world would say plant now
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so that you have some growth because, you know, you plant a 6-foot evergreen, it's relatively inexpensive, and they grow better than trying to bring in a 10-foot or even a 4-foot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so you plant it under the deciduous trees, and then...
I think our point is we need a nice...
Sure.
We need a better...
You need to improve it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To the north, just means, like, you can't see much other than the north line, can you? I mean, you're talking about requiring trees from the east, so I don't think you're going to see anything much.
Okay.
Unless you're looking backwards as you're going eastbound on 30.
So that's the first one. So that's looking southeast.
Yeah.
And again, there's a tree line along the north and along the west.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's there's enough.
Mm-hmm. There's a few that look like they're on their way out.
Yeah.
Well, and just as, I mean, that type of tree doesn't cover anything.
Sure.
Deciduous. They're tall trees. They're like 50, yeah. 60 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It would be nice if there was a way to, I mean, because those trees may not be dead, or that's a very generic.
Mm-hmm. We can add to the motion. Subject, you know, the subject to the conditions that P&Z put on it, or the number two that they had, but we can also add that the other trees need to be implemented now.
How do we get specific, though? I mean, if we're, because it sounds like maybe we're going to ask them to remove some now, which, I mean, because they're going to probably ask us, well, which one should we be removing?
Well,
I mean,
don't
so, yeah. You know, because that could come up.
Or if there was like a spacing that you'd recommend.
And that was the other thing. There was like three trees and then space where you could see the pile and then a couple more trees. So.
Yeah, because where there is evergreen, it does provide a better buffer at when you're driving. Absolutely. You can't really see through.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at 17 years.
17 years left.
And if, I mean, is it too much to ask to have a plan for that? And then prove that?
We could have them contact a landscaper horticulturist and check the health of the trees, and the ones that they determined to be dying or on that path to replace them within a reasonable amount of time, like within a year?
Sooner than that.
Okay.
I'd say before fall planting.
For fall, okay.
Before
so
fall
you're looking at September, probably.
Yeah, fall planting.
Before the end of September. You want to add that to your motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we got it, but.
Okay.
So they should contact a landscape company or a horticulturist
yeah.
to do an assessment.
Our code references the most recent published methods established by the Council of Tree and Landscape Appraisers as a resource.
And not only dying or beginning to die trees,
yeah.
but gaps in mm-hmm. existing planting.
Okay.
Something like that.
Sure.
I think we've got the gist.
As a motion.
Okay.
I'm going to second that.
Motion by Youngberg, second by Gretzky. Roll call vote, please.
Gretzky.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
There we go. Anything else that needs to come in before?
I'm just going to give you an update. The deadline for the Board of Adjustment submittals has not come yet, but we do know that we're going to have an extraction use just south of this
okay.
site, on the east side. There was an asphalt or batch plant request.
That was the borrow pit for PCI.
On the east side of the road.
Extraction things.
And now it might be a sand.
The area is growing. There is a need for this kind of thing.
Yep.
So that will be before the Board of Adjustment in July. And then just giving you an update about the McKay property, the challenges. June 29 is the preliminary hearing for the YSS conditional use permit. July 19 is the hearing date. Bed and breakfast date is set for September 12th. And I don't believe that anything's been filed yet for the commercial campground and RV park that was requested.
I missed that one.
Have the Perkins been given permits to move forward?
The property owner came in a few days ago and indicated that they were considering entering into some type of lease agreement to operate the bed and breakfast. To allow the Perkins to operate the bed and breakfast, but that's all I heard.
Thank you.
Just that only, not the events.
Okay. All righty. So. What's the date for July?
It is, Stephanie?
13.
Let's see.
I can tell you too.
I have to look on the calendar.
Okay. Any prospective candidates for fill our seat?
You know, I the board staff told us that typically they like to run at least a 90-day period, which is it's set out in state law. And we've got a candidate who's interested that they've interviewed,
okay.
Likely person. But again, I think they want to make sure that they keep that opportunity open for people who are interested.
Okay.
Yeah. We definitely need to have a full.
All right.
Board.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Aye. All in favor.
Aye.
Thank you.